Well, hello there. Thank you for joining me today. I think I've solved the mystery. Where do these black people come from? Well, kind of a long story, but let me get going here. If you think, well, there is a distinct correlation between religious figures, such as churches, because remember, all churches have been co-opted by the Roman Catholic Church. So, spread out all around the world are all these churches, right? Well, they're posing as priests, right? But actually, these people are actually agents of the government. In some cases, a lot of these chefs we have all around, right? They all have a tell, right? Nancy Pelosi recently came out furious about her friend, the world kitchen chef, getting bombed in Israel. Now, why was she so upset? Well, a couple of reasons, because they're tight friends, which says a lot about that operation, right? And also, they're probably going to use this as a huge fundraising. So, just as a reminder, all of this emanates out of the Vatican. The word Vatican comes from Latin and is a contradiction of two words in the following word. Wait, vatis, prophetic or diviner, can, can, serpent slash snake. These two words combined make the prophetic or made divine serpent. So divine serpent. The Vatican is a place, so you may say that the Vatican means the place of prophetic and worship serpent. The Vatican City and St. Peter's Basilica were built on the ancient pagan site called, in Latin, Vaticanus Manus, which means hills or mountains of prophecy. The word derives from the Latin vatus, VATES, which means tellers of the future. This name was given to the hillside on the west bank of the Tiber River in Rome because daily lineups of fortune tellers used to hawk their wares there to passerbyers on the street. In the 14th century, when the papacy was returned to Rome from Avignon, France, the present-day Vatican became the residence of the popes, and the word came to refer to the enclave in the middle of Rome that had become the seat of the Roman Catholic Church. There is a comparison between Washington, D.C., and Vatican Rome. As you can see, there are very similar Greco-Roman capitol buildings, and they both have an obelisk that faces their domes also. So they both have that phallic symbol, also known as an obelisk, that specifically faces the domes. Plus, both Washington, D.C., and the Roman Vatican have known to have seven hills. Additionally, both of them are major centers or capitals. I saw a woman sit upon a scarlet-colored beast full of blasphemy, having seven heads, and the woman was arrayed in purple and scarlet color and decked with gold and precious stones and pearls, having a golden cup in her hand full of abominations and filthiness of her fornication. And the woman which thou sawest in that great city, which reigneth over the kings of the earth, and here in the mind which hath wisdom. The seven heads are seven mountains or hills on which the woman sitteth. And that came from Revelation 17:3. A woman rides the beast that represents Antichrist and the revived Roman Empire he will rule. She is a city built on seven hills that reigns over the kings of the earth. John equates the reader's acceptance of this revelation with wisdom, that insight demands our careful and prayerful attention. Many prophecy teachers insist that the woman is the United States. No, the U.S. is a country. It might justifiably be referred to as Sodom, considering the honor now given to homosexuals, but it is not Mystery Babylon. She is declared to be a city. Nor is the woman ancient Babylon now being rebuilt in Iraq, for it is not built on seven hills. Some other cities are, but only Rome meets all the criteria, including being known as Babylon. Even Catholic apologist Carl Keatings confirms that Rome was known as Babylon and cities. The Catholic Encyclopedia states it is within the city of Rome, called the City of Seven Hills, that the entire area of Vatican State proper is now confined. The woman is called a whore, with whom earthly kings have committed fornication. Against two cities that could charge be made, Jerusalem and Rome. Jerusalem was indicated for spiritual fornication by numerous prophets, Isaiah 1:21, etc., but does not meet the other criteria. Vatican City claims to have been the worldwide headquarters of Christianity since its beginnings. Her Pope claims to be the Vicar of Christ and his church the true church and bride of Christ. Christ said his kingdom was not of this world, otherwise his servants would fight. The popes have fought with armies and navies in the name of Christ to build a worldwide empire. Vatican II states that even today, the Roman Catholic Church ceaselessly seeks to bring under its control all mankind and all of their goods. And in furtherance of these goals, it has engaged, exactly as John foresaw, in fornication, unholy alliances with the kings of the earth. She is clothed in purple and scarlet, the colors of the Catholic clergy. The Catholic Encyclopedia states a cloak with a long train and a hooded shoulder cape. It was purple wool for bishops. For cardinals, it was scarlet watered silk. Cassock, the close-fitting ankle-length robe worn by the Catholic clergy as their official garb. The color for bishops and other prelates is purple. For cardinals, it's scarlet. Her incredible wealth next caught John's eye. She was decked with gold and precious stones and pearls. Even Christ's blood-stained cross has been turned to gold, reflecting her riches. The Catholic Encyclopedia says the pictorial cross, suspended by a chain around the neck of abbots, bishops, archbishops, cardinals, and the Pope, should be made of gold, decorated with gems. She had a gold cup or a chalice in her hand, full of abominations and filthiness of her fornication. The Catholic Encyclopedia calls the gold chalice the most important of the sacred vessels. That church is known for its many thousands of golden chalices around the world. A recent newspaper article reported, let me see here, just a second, I got. Fix this type. Reported the fabulous treasures of Lourdes, France, whose existence was kept secret by the Catholic Church for 120 years, has been unveiled. Rumors have been circulating for decades about a priceless collection of gold chalices, diamond-studded crucifixes, silver, and precious stones. After an indiscreet remark by their press spokesman this week, church authorities agreed to reveal part of the collection. Some floor-to-ceiling cases were opened to reveal 59 solid gold chalices, along rings, crucifixes, statues, and heavy gold brooches, many encrusted with precious stones. Almost hidden by the other treasures is the crown of Notre Dame de Lourdes, made by a Paris goldsmith in 1876 and studded with diamonds. Church authorities say they cannot put a value on the collection. "I have no idea," said Father Pierre Couture. "It is of inestimable wealth." Across the road is a building housing hundreds of antique Escletian garments, robes, mitres, sashes, many in heavy gold thread. "The church itself is poor," insists Father Cherez. "The Vatican itself is poor. And the treasures described here is only part of that, which is kept in one location, the small town of Lourdes, France." And if you can remember in the past, when I talked about the Vatican, they have tricky ways that they hide and report their finances. One set of books never gets shown. Okay, I'll continue reading. "She has practiced evil to gather her wealth, for the golden cup is filled with abominations and filthiness. Much of the wealth of the Roman Catholic Church was acquired by confiscating property of the Inquisition's pitiful victims. Even the dead were exhumed to face trial, and property was taken from their heirs by the church. That practice," one historian writes, "offered unlimited opportunities for loot." And I'll be talking more about this whole thing on the game board. Ever since they've taken over, it has been about theft of land and really murder to get that theft. So I'll keep on this train of thought for now, though. Most of Rome's wealth has been acquired through the sale of salvation. Untold billions of dollars have been paid to her by those who thought they were purchasing heaven on the installment plan for themselves or loved ones. The practice continues to this day blatantly where Catholicism is in control. Less obvious here in the United States, where, for example, one pays the church to have a mass card placed on the altar in the name of the deceased during mass to reduce time in purgatory. The wealthy often leave a fortune for masses to be said for their salvation after their death. In addition to such perversions of the gospel, there are further abominations fully documented in police and court records of corrupt banking practices, laundering of drug money, trading in counterfeit securities, and dealings with the mafia, which the Vatican and her representatives around the world have long employed. Former Business Week correspondent in Rome, Nino Lobello, who, because of its incredible wealth, calls Rome the tycoon on the Tiber, says the Vatican is so closely allied with the mafia in Italy that many people believe that Sicily is nothing more than a Vatican holding. And I'll have more of that in a little bit here because, yes, they did form an alliance with the mafia right around World War II. So here we kind of get kind of interested, and in case you're wondering, well, why don't you get this organized? Well, because I am not able to. What happens is as I'm putting this file together and lacking any kind of help, I put it in sections that I think it should go, right? Now, were I to go back and to try to change those sections around, what happens with radiation poisoning is you get kind of confused. And so once I start seeing the words too many times, I'll lose track of where I was. Or then what I'll do is when I go to look at the script again, I'll think, oh, I already read that, and I'll get confused again. So this is my way to survive and not be confused. And besides, it gives a little bit of variety, right? There's many ways to look at things. So I found it said this blog, Ancient Greece and Ancient Rome, because remember I've said for a long time that there's something about this Greek thing. It all kind of got mixed together, right? So ancient Greece and ancient Rome was in America. and it will prove beyond a reasonable doubt that this is a factional statement. Because for a long time, we've been told that the United States is part of the new world, right? Well, is it really? The United States could really be the old world. So let me explain why I'm thinking this way, okay? So they said ancient Greece and ancient Rome was in America. Well, yeah, we have all these symbols all over, right? Let's start first with Washington, D.C., which means District of Columbia. Columbia was named after the American Indian Virgin Goddess Columbia. They also seem to think that in one place, a lot of places, actually, they talk about Columbia means the feminine word for Columbus, but that's just that's not true, okay? And here's why, because I am real sure that Black people were here first, and I've been going on and on about this the last few shows, so let me just keep reading here, okay? And the reason I'm saying this in the beginning is because I do not like to bury the lead. And I have more documentation below this, but let's get to the punchline here, okay? Columbia is also the symbol for Columbia Motion Pictures and the Statue of Liberty, aka Lady Liberty. Keep in mind, the crown on the Statue of Liberty has 7 spikes, right? Okay. Columbia is the personification of America, and she symbolizes liberty, freedom, and justice. Columbia was a Melanite, a Black Creek Greek Indian woman. So Columbia, that statue you see there right at the harbor coming into the United States, well, I think it's the opposite, right? They say it symbolizes liberty, freedom, and justice, but it's just the opposite, right? But Columbia was a Melanite, Black Creek Greek Indian woman before she was whitewashed to reflect the likeness of a European woman. The U.S. Capitol building, which is Greco-Roman architecture, sits in the center of a grid that is shaped like an owl. Yes, Washington, D.C. sits on an owl grid. American Indian goddess Columbia also represents the owl, or the eagle, or the phoenix, because she knows who and is therefore wise. The owl symbolizes supervision, wisdom, because it can rotate its head 360 degrees. And the owl, hieroglyphic, is a symbol for the letter M, which is 13, or M-U-U-R. The owl, the eagle or phoenix, and the draco, the dragon or serpent, are a husband and wife team, hermetic marriage, that work together as our Kundali system, which created and maintains our physical bodies. So the owl rose its head all the way around, which makes a lot of sense, right? The eagle and the owl could also be the eagle or the phoenix. And I've said over and over, a lot of times when you think you're looking at an eagle, it's got a little longer neck and it's probably a phoenix. Okay, that's one of their main symbols. So Columbia, free energy, the land of Virgin Mary, Virginia and Maryland, Washington, D.C. So then it really got going good about the who were the Moors, M-O-O-R-S, in ancient times. And also I remember right off the top of my head when I read that word Moors, because I've been kind of an expert in hats, right? I think it was the Moors, and I'll have to look it up. They wore that, it's called a faiz. I'm getting there. It's a faiz or something. It's a tall red hat with a black tassel. Yeah, I think the Moors wore that hat. Who else wore that hat? Oh, the, let me see. One of those Illuminati groups. They run the charities for children. They wear that red, it's called a fez hat, F-E-Z hat. I'll look it up, but I'm pretty sure that's where the Moors came from. As a matter of fact, the more design elements were popular again in the 60s. Why do I know this? Because I had this big red lamp with gold on it. The ugliest thing you ever want to see, but for some reason, I liked it for a while. And it was part of this Moore design. So yeah, Moore design was popular. So anyway, so let me get back here. Because what they're saying is America is the true or old world. And I think it makes a great deal of sense here, okay? Ancient Greece and ancient Rome was in America, since Washington, D.C. was the first Vatican City in Rome, Maryland. Ancient Greece and ancient Rome was in America, since Rome, Maryland, which is Washington, D.C., was the first Vatican City, since America is the true old world. Washington, D.C.'s original name was Rome, Maryland, and a branch of the Potomac River was called the Tiber Creek, which was named after the Tiber River in Rome. And remember that whore of Babylon was sitting there all drenched in red and gold on the Tiber River, right? She was drenched just like those Catholic priests, right? So that explains why those Catholic priests wear that gold and purple and stuff, right? Like Rome, Washington, D.C. has seven hills, whose names are Capitol Hill, Meridian Hill, Floral Hills, Forest Hills, Hillbrook Hill, Hillcrest Hill, and Knox Hill. Washington, D.C. also fits the description of the harlot, being Rome, that sits on seven mountains in the KJV Bible, Revelation 17:9. Only one city has for more than 2,000 years been known as a city of seven hills. That city is Rome. The Catholic Encyclopedia states, it is within the city of Rome, called the City of Seven Hills, that the entire area of Vatican State proper is now confined. There are, of course, other cities, such as Rio de Janeiro, that were also built on seven hills. And remember, Washington, D.C. is also a city within a city, right? So Vatican City was a city within a city. Well, the city of London is also a city within a city, right? So all three of these places just so happen to be cities within cities, right? And I don't think that city of London is on seven hills, but I'll check later. Okay, let me keep reading here. The Pentagon in Rome, Maryland, known as Washington, D.C., is more elaborate with its design, which suggests that it is the original or the grand one. There was once an obelisk, or those phallic symbols, in the center of the U.S. Pentagon, and they think it's to transmit energy, but nah. You can still see what's left of the obelisk that was once there because the foundation is there. And I'm reading from their words. It says, I have noticed that whenever you see a Greco-Roman building or a Gothic building with a dome or a obelisk, which is a tree of life, penetrating through the center of the cross or the X pattern of the four cardinal points or four rivers of life, that building was once able to generate free energy. No, that is not true. But anyway, so ancient, well, maybe it was true. I don't really know. These people, these Tartarian people, just went nuts with all this free energy. And I've already talked about enough about energy in this day and age. Just look at my shows about electricity and how it's going to kill us. Ancient Greece and ancient Rome was in America, since the Capitoline wolf suckling Romulus and Remus is in Rome, Maryland. See, this is interesting because they have this thing called the Capitoline, Capitoline wolf. And that wolf is suckling Romulus and Remus. And that is in Rome, Maryland, aka Washington, D.C. So This ancient Rome statue is in the National Gallery of Art in Rome, Maryland. Let me see. The Capitoline Wolf is a bronze sculpture depicting a scene from the legend of the founding of Rome. The sculpture shows a she-wolf suckling the mythical twin founders of Rome, Romulus and Remus. The image of the she-wolf suckling Romulus and Remus is a symbol of Rome since ancient times and one of the most recognizable icons of ancient mythology. Yes, ancient Greece and ancient Rome was in America, since the Capitoline wolf is a symbol of the founding of Rome. We have a total of 13 Capitoline wolf statues in the Americas, mostly in North America, which suggests that the superior or ancient Rome was in the Americas. And here's a list of these statues. Chicago, Illinois. Boston, Massachusetts, interior entrance to Boston Latin School, Cincinnati, Ohio, Cleveland, Ohio, Del Rio, Texas, located at the Brinkley Circle, home of Dr. John Romulus Brinkley. I wonder why his name is that, right? New York City, New York, located in the Riverdale neighborhood of the Bronx on the grounds of the Hebrew Home for the Aged. Rome, Georgia, at the entrance to the Rome City Auditorium. Rome, New York, located at the Beaches Conference. And Michigan, they have one. Tulsa, Oklahoma. Washington, D.C., on the ground floor of the National Gallery of Art. So, it says, as you can see the list above, we also have Capitoline wolves in Chicago, Illinois, Cincinnati, Ohio, and Rome, Georgia, all of which are just like the Rome, Maryland in Washington, D.C., since each one of them is built around seven hills and has their own Capitoline wolf as a symbol of the founding of Rome. Rome in Europe has nothing like this, which suggests that the superior Rome or Grand Rome was in the Americas. Rome was an extension of Granada land, since Rome means pomegranate. Pomegranates are a symbol of the promised land of Israel, which was Granada land. Speaking of Rome, Georgia, the city was allegedly named after Rome, Italy in 1835 because Rome, Georgia also has seven hills and three rivers, just like Rome, Italy in Europe has. The seven hills of Rome, Georgia, and that's Georgia here in the United States, is Old Shorter Hill, Myrtle Hill, Jackson Hill, Neely Hill, Mount Aventine Hill, Lumpkin Hill, and Blossom Hill. The three rivers in Rome, Georgia are the Ascobali River, Coosaw River, and the Etowah River. The Capitoline wolf suckling Romulus and Remus at the front entrance of the Rome City Auditorium in Rome, Georgia is the icing on the cake because it's way too many coincidences for this to be one chance. Rome, Georgia is ancient Rome, and Rome, Maryland, Washington, D.C. is an extension of it since Georgetown is in Washington, D.C. and all the other similarities that we can factor in too. Not only do we have Greco-Roman architecture as proof, but we have plenty of Greek place names all over America, but especially in Georgia. Let's discuss Georgia. Georgia is the feminine form of George. George comes from the Greek Georgios, which is derived from the Greek word blah, 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 meaning farmer, earth worker. Now we know that Georgia is a Greek Creek Cherokee name. Let's look at some of these Greek place names in Georgia. Sparta, Georgia, Ephinus, Georgia Corinth, Georgia Sardinus, Georgia Cimmerian, Georgia Antioch, Georgia Arcadia, Georgia Columbus, Georgia Athens, Georgia Olympia, Georgia Atlanta. And Atlanta, Georgia is also that whole area where the CDC is, right? There's also Troy, Georgia, Thespis, Georgia, Egypt, Georgia, Rome, Georgia, Eden, Georgia, Jerusalem, Georgia, Bethlehem, Georgia. I mean, kind of hard to deny that Georgia is pretty important, right? The interesting thing about Georgia is they founded a Mayan temple in Georgia. This makes perfect sense. So this Mayan temple was not a hoax. Also, one third or 33% of the Mayans' tongue was Greek, according to the book Queen Mu and the Egyptian Sphinx. In this other book, they stated, at present, we are studying the native tongues and find that at least as far as Zapoteca and Mayan languages are concerned, they are of Indo-European Sanskrit origin. And Sanskrit, the people from India, right? Yes, the Mayas spoke Sanskrit, which is, of course, the oldest language and the origin of all languages. Sanskrit is, of course, an Indian language, all of which gives credence to the fact that Indian superior, or the Americas, is the true old world and the birthplace of civilization. This also gives credence to the fact that languages like Greek and Roman Latin come from the tongue of the ancient Maya Indian. And remember, I've been saying all along that there were black people here. They mated with some people from India, right? And then they came up with the Native American Indians, which was a combo of black people and people from India became American Indians, right? So my guess was pretty good. Okay. Also, they found ancient Greek and ancient Roman coins in the Americas. So there is nothing new about the Americas, which is strong evidence to suggest that ancient Greece and ancient Rome was in old world America. It's hard for people to understand that everything in the Near East is just a reflection. Everything that we had first in the Americas, the Orient or the Far East, yes, including Egypt, because Egypt was a global Black Moor civilization. Black Moors, okay? It said, East, the Near East is just a reflection of everything that we had first in the Americas. Remember, I keep saying they always have like North Korea, South Korea, North Vietnam, South Vietnam, right? Okay. Now we get to this part, but about knock the top of my head off, okay? In this post is some Black Moor rulers of Greece and Egypt, which later became Greco-Roman, Greece and Rome, after conquest. And the first kings of Maritita, yes, they were all Melanite Black at first. So please avoid the hijack of the whitewash of history. If you are a Moor, or M-U-U-R, or M-A-U-R, knowing your Greco-Egyptian is important, since the Berber kings that established ancient Mauritania descend from the Greco-Egyptian bloodline of kings and pharaohs mentioned in the blog images. History is not how we know it. I did a blog post called The Rock of Gibraltar is Stone Mountain in Georgia, which demonstrates that the original Greeks and the Greek gods were Black Moors. This post also proves that Islam comes from the Americas. The Moors are said to have come from Mauritania. I agree with this since the word Mauritanian comes from the land of Moors, which also translates to as the land of Mary. So The Americas is old Egypt. Tamari, the land of the Moors, the land of Mary, because the ancient Egyptian god Ptah, P-T-A-H, is from the Americas. Yes, Ptah, or Judah, is from the Americas because his territory was Ptah, Utah, Judah territory, which covered Mexico and several states, California, Utah, Nevada, Arizona, Oklahoma, Missouri, and Texas. Additionally, Ptah was also the chief god of Luxor in Memphis, Tennessee, which was in the Americas. Christian consensus believes that the seven hills mentioned in the Bible under Revelations are the seven hills of Rome, across the Tiber from the Vatican. Seated upon these seven hills is the great prostitute adorned in purple robes and mounted upon a scarlet beast. She is the great city who has dominion over the kings of earth. Metaphorically, she is the Pope. In 800 AD, Pope Leo III established the precedent that the emperor must be subordinate to papal supremacy. The humble garments of popes and the bishops were burned and replaced with fine, ornate, and bejeweled robes and a mitre of greater stature than a crown. The people would see these vestments as more becoming than those of kings and know that the Pope had been knighted by God with greater power than kings. Therein, the people would understand that the Pope was Lord over kings. Dubbed the Kingmaker, it was Pope Leon III who crowned Charlemagne emperor despite the objections from the people. Thereafter to present day, the Vatican was tasked with making kings and then presidents, given the Pope's spiritual authority of Christ. That's exactly how they took over. The first use of the term Jew in the Bible was in the modified version of the original 1650 King James Bible in 1760. The updated version was overseen by Benjamin Blaney, a self-proclaimed expert in Hebrew Jewish studies. It was this version that first declared that Jews were the chosen people, a false doctrine. In actuality, the descendants or children of Jacob, including those who stray and those who proclaim God, are actually the chosen people. In addition, the schism muddies when interpreting the man Israel versus the land Israel in interpretation. Israel today is defined as land, currently occupied by secular, ungodly persons. Zionists who rose to prominence not in the days of Jesus, but in the 19th century via Theodore Herzl, the father of political Zionism. We have two portals of dark power controlling our globe, Zionists and the Vatican. And I would have to say that they are both the same. Conspiracies in solidarity with the Zionists and Israel and their unrelenting murder of the Palestinians, many media influencers attempts to compare the genocide with nomadic African tribesmen fighting for water and grazing lands in part of Africa. Proclaiming the Fulani, F-U-L-A-N-I tribe as Muslim, the outcry is, why are there no protests when the Fulani murdered white farmers? They are Muslim, an odd comparable at the very least. The Zionists occupying Israel are universally declared to be Western allies. The U.S. taxpayers give them billions each year. You see, yeah, we already know all that. Okay, so bioweapons to aid in the further deployment of the planet climate to suck money from the people as to create a peasant class reminiscent of the Soviet Union under the Bolsheviks. So yes, this is all to bring us back to a peasant class. The endless big pharma campaign wherein drugs are used to treat diseases created by the company tasked with their curative that only causes more debilitating illness and death. So what happens is this is actually, let me see here. So let me keep reading here. They operate in a very subtle way. The evidence for this is that we see a reflection between America and the Vatican. The United States Capitol is designed to resemble the Vatican. The obelisk in the United States also is a direct reflection of the obelisk in Rome. And the Vatican, the symbols of sun worship, the Vatican has a sun worshiping sign, and so does the CIA. Okay. Graphic motifs are used throughout the website of the CIA, and just despite rumors from across the web, the CIA motto logo, and you'll know why I'm saying this in a minute, has not changed from the original approved by President Truman in 1950. And what you will see in the center of the CIA logo is, in fact, sun symbolism. As a matter of fact, in the very center of the CIA logo is, in fact, the NATO logo. And, in fact, the logo on the, there's different suns, okay? The sun on the Catholic Church has an IHS business, right? That really means Isis, Horus, and the other one. So, this is one on the Catholic Church is a rayed solar symbol first appearing in ancient Greek. It's called the Virginia, V-E-R-G-I-N-A sun, has 16 triangular rays, while the comparable symbols of the same period have 16, 12, or 6 rays. Also, the National Security Agency, or NSA, they admit that the silver key in its logo represents the Pope's temporal power. The silver and gold keys on the papal emblem symbolizes the temporal and spiritual power the Pope wields. The logo, which is IHS, right? That logo has 36 rays of the sunburst. And that logo, and this is the one from the Catholic Church that says IHS, right? The 36 rays of the sunburst numerically add up to 666. Okay. Okay. So then I started out, this whole thing was, I started out because the CIA was invented by the Vatican. They all work hand in hand, and it makes a great deal of sense, right? Okay. I found an article saying the CIA Vatican torturing and trafficking of children. Back in 1972, NYPD detective James Rothstein arrested one of the 5 Watergate burglars. Remember, we had this big break-in called the Watergate at the Watergate Hotel, okay? So, this NYPD detective, James Rothstein, arrested one of the 5 Watergate burglars, CIA operative Frank Sturgis. During a 2-hour interrogation, he discovered that the burglars weren't trying to obtain election strategies as the mainstream media proposed, but were looking for a book which listed Democratic and Republican politicians who accessed child prostitutes and their sexual proclivities and the amount they paid to rape children. Rothstein maintained that the Watergate break-in was strictly based on one thing, the pedophile records that were being kept at the Democratic National Headquarters. And this is, you know, just the other day, the last couple of weeks, they're talking about P. Diddy. He's out there raping children, just like Epstein. What are they really trying to tell us here, right? Just like Epstein, they're always yapping about taking pictures of people in compromising positions, right? Well, I tend to believe that that part is very true, right? You get somebody that you want to compromise, you get them drunk, or you slip them some pills, and then you take pictures, right? So it's probably a multi-step process, right? You get them drunk the first time, you figure out where their weaknesses are, and then you deliver their weaknesses, right? And then you photograph that. Not a big deal. But it's interesting because my entire life, I would have told you that the Watergate hotel burglaries were to disrupt something between the Democrats and the Republicans. So I'll continue reading. It is well known in Washington that pictures, videos, and recordings of prolific pedophile parties were used to blackmail politicians. Even back in Watergate days, the children were believed to be obtained through an international child trafficking ring run by CIA Vatican Mafia connections. The Vatican's Ninth Circle cult members were said to be global leaders heavily involved in pedophilia and based in countries worldwide. Well, there's one person that has been investigating these Ninth Circles, and his name is Kevin Annett, A-N-N-E-T-T. I do not trust him as far as I can throw him. But is he lying full stop? Probably not. So I'll keep reading here. The Ninth Circle began at least three centuries ago in the Vatican, Kevin Annette says, but has expanded to embrace local satanic child sacrifice cults across Europe and the Americas. Thanks to Catholic pressure, the Ninth Circle affiliated strongly with Nazi cultic groups that had close ties to the Waffen-SS during the 30s and 40s. In 1953, the CIA imported Nazi mind control experts from Hitler's Germany for the purpose of developing assassins and super spies. This MKUltra program of illegal human experiences was centered on torturing the developing brain of a child. I'd done shows about this. I was part of that generation. Now, the government didn't give us directly LSD, but we bought LSD and we took LSD, and I suppose that LSD came from them, right? I remember being in concerts. I was in Santa Barbara at the time, and we would go to concerts. And yes, there were people handing out free LSD. So I was kind of a cagey kid because we never took the freaking LSD. It didn't seem like a good idea. We brought our own. So let me see here. To secure lifetime control over the victim, the severe abuse also began in the womb and at least by six. And I've talked a lot about this, about the raping of children, the black eyes, so I'm not going to go there again. But in 1964, after congressional investigation, CIA Director Richard Helms claimed that he shut down the MK mind control program, but not before destroying all the records. So yeah, that was the one thing. They destroyed all the records. But see, where this stuff doesn't always end up looking true, because I was there and I graduated from high school in 1969. And I can tell you for a fact that around 1968, we were all taking LSD, okay? So that was when it really hit the streets, was 1968. They destroyed all the original records. So, survivor. Let me see here. So, they've been talking so far along about this mafia connections, right? With the Catholic Church and all of them in the U.S. Not one to miss a fascist opportunity when they saw it. The U.S. Office of Strategic Services, the OSS, which was the forerunner of the CIA, okay, OSS, under the leadership of William Wild Bill Donovan, quickly enlisted both Galen and SS General Carl Wolff to form the Gebland Organization, later to transform into present-day German BND, which received its initial funding from U.S. Army G2 intelligence service. So we have William Wild Bill Donovan starting the OSS, right? Okay. But the American point man on this was Alan Dulles. Don't confuse Alan Dulles. Alan Dulles, I think it's Alan Dulles' brother, who started the Banana Wars and robbed and raped that whole part of the world. But I don't want to get them confused right now. So many criminals, right? So little time. The American point man on this, that was this deal with the OSS under Wild Bill Donovan, was Alan Dulles, the first president in 1927 of the Council on Foreign Relations, and later the first head of the CIA. Duly incorporated into the American fold, the werewolves, W-E-R-E-W-O-L-V. Here again, we got some wolves, right? That statue I was talking about earlier was a wolf. A wolf. So what'd they do? Let me scroll back here again. So duly incorporated into the American fold, the werewolves were given their initial meddling took place in Italy, and they were rebranded as gladiators, and they called it Operation Gladio. In 1947, the CIA, having that year superseded the OSS, was faced with its first daunting task, how to prevent the Italian Communist Party from forming the next government. Elections were scheduled for 1948, and the PCI was a virtual shoo-in, not just in Italy proper, but in Sicily as well. Fortunately, Gladio was ready and waiting. The gladiators had been training in a special camp set up in Sardinia under the local command of the former World War II Italian fascist leader, Prince Junio Valerio Borghese. In addition, hundreds of American mafiosos began to arrive on the shores of Italy to lend a hand with the communist problem. The arrival of the made men was a result of Donovan, remember Wild Bill Donovan, efforts from 1943 onward in working with American mobsters Charles Lucky Luciano and Vito Genovese to conjure new drug funding for the OSS's off-book operations, and to install the Sicilian Mafia on the island in the lead-up to Operation Husky, the Allied invasion of Sicily. These forces were now unleashed on the Italian electorate, and through 1948, an average of 5 people a week were murdered by the CIA-backed terrorist units. The results were grimly predictable. Hallelujah, the PCI was defeated and the Christian Democrats returned to power. Still, the threat remained. Fully half the Italian electorate were communist sympathizers, and moreover, leftist policies pervaded much of the rest of the diseased European body. More would have to be done. The problem, however, was money. There simply wasn't enough of it. Thus, the initial $200 million in funding for Gladio, which has come from the Rockefeller and Mellon Foundations, was quickly exhausted. And though the National Security Act of 1947 had provided the loophole that allowed for the CIA's covert operations, it had not allowed for their overt congressional funding. There lay the rub. Thankfully, Paul Helliwell knew how to solve the itch. Paul Helliwell was an inner member of the original OSS, along with key scions of the Morgan, Mellon, Vanderbilt, Carnegie, DuPont, and Ryan families, and according to Williams, likely the greatest unsung hero of the Oh-So Social Club. It was he who, having cut his teeth, oh, wait a second here. Who, having cut his teeth in the drugs for arms trade by shepherding opium deals, conjured the brilliant inspiration to do the very same thing in the United States itself. Thus, it was at his suggestion that Donovan, Wild Bill Donovan, elected to forge the deep bonds, and that exist to this day, between the nation's intelligence services and organized crime. These early halcyon days would soon lead to the infamous French Connection, hence the Golden Triangle, where the CIA's very own Air America transported drugs out of Southeast Asia during the Vietnam War and later to the Balkan, Mexican, and Colombian drug cartels. All very well and good, but to begin with, there was yet a fly in the whole drug for arms for terror ointment, to wit, how to pay off the mafiosa without anybody noticing. Indeed, how to stash, launder, and hide all this financial derringer from the prying eyes of the authorities, you know, the real authorities, the treasury cops, and so forth. How do you do that? Article 2 of the LATERN, LATERN Treaty of 1929 was clear and unequivocal. The article, which served to regulate matters between the Holy See and the Italian state, expressly forbade any interference of the latter in the affairs of the former. It is hardly conceivable, of course, that the framers of the treaty ever foresaw that such immunity could actually mean in practice. But then they probably hadn't reckoned on the fiendish formulation of the Institute for Works of Religion, or more colloquially, the Vatican Bank. Established by Pope Pius XII in 1942, the bank would quickly come to serve as the principal repository post-war, both for the Sicilian Mafia and for the OSS, wherein all the monies and documents relating to drug trafficking and to Gladio would be stored and laundered. Already in 1945, the Pope had held private audiences with Wild Bill Donovan to discuss the implementation of Gladio, and where, as Williams reports, Donovan was knighted as an anti-communist crusader with the Grand Cross of the Order of Sylvester. Prior to this time, Pius XII had proven himself a loyal ally in working with Dulles and the OSS to establish the ratlines, that's R-A-T-L-I-N-E-S, used to help prominent Nazis escape Europe. Now, new horizons beckoned. The first duty at hand, of course, was to destroy the communist menace in respect to the 1948 elections. So, the second duty at hand was longer term. Communism, socialism, I see, untraceable money, drug money. In the months before the 1948 election, the CIA deposited some $65 million into the Vatican Bank. Also, a lot of the funding for Operation Gladio, and I'm just going from memory, so you might want to check me out before you go repeat it. I believe that a lot of the money that funded Gladio came from the Marshall Plan. Your tax dollars at work, kids, your tax dollars at work. I've been saying this for years. We are paying them to murder us, right? This gets really kind of, I'll tell you a little bit more, okay? and remember also, I talked about early on, there was a big deal in this country in Louisiana. A bunch of Italians got caught and there was a big hanging and stuff. I don't remember what that was all about. Okay, so then they brought in a new alliance with the Corsican mafia. Unlike the Sicilian mob, the Corsicans had extensive experience in processing heroin, a skill they had picked up through years working with Laotians in Cambodia and Vietnamese in French Indonesia. A supply route then emerged, running through Burma, through Turkey, to Beirut, thus to Marseille. Alas, there was a slight hitch when the leftist dock workers in Marseille, being sympathetic to the rebel army under Ho Chi Minh, refused to load and unload the boats from Indochina. No worries. A deft bit of terror administered by the Corsican boys and funded by the CIA, and problem solved. By 1951, then Marseille had become the center of the Western heroin industry. Voila, the French connection. Meanwhile, Wild Bill Donovan had resigned from the CIA to form the World Commerce Corporation, whose primary function was to facilitate the arms for drugs deals with the KMT. Paul Helliwell lent a needed hand at the helm by heading up Sea Supply Inc., a CIA front company gainfully employed in shipping heroin from Bangkok. By 1958, the whole operation was so successful that a second supply route was established running through Saigon. Here, with the help of Diem, the U.S. installed the despot of South Vietnam, and the despot of South Vietnam proved invaluable. And I talked about that when I talked about Vietnam. They really, there's two purposes, okay? It was a kill box, meaning kill a bunch of those people, right? Torture them all kinds of horrific ways in Cambodia and stuff. But the real thing, when you're in there killing and murdering people and causing all this chaos, what do you do out the back door? Well, you load up planes with drugs. And I talked about this. I documented it all. I'm not just guessing here, right? There was a whole separate operations of people flying out drugs from these war zones. Same thing in Pakistan and same thing in Afghanistan. If you look on my timeline over on my website and you do a Control F search for Afghanistan, other people have documented the fact that it was a mission for the drugs, for the poppies. They just disguise it as other things, right? They can't really say, oh, we're going to go in these countries and steal all these drugs. They got to say, we got to go kill them. They're causing us problems. If we don't kill them, they're going to kill us. Well, I mean, just think about the logic here, right? They're over there actually getting heroin, which kills people, right? So, okay. Still, there was a potential cloud on the horizon, i.e., word of all these shenanigans were bound to leak out. What to do? The first reflex, naturally, was to pin the blame for the West's growing heroin problem on the communist China under Mao Zedong. Check. The second, more considered response was to organize an ongoing campaign to deflect attention away from and burnish the image of the CIA. Check. And to this end, in 1953, did the CIA establish Operation Mockingbird? Under Mockingbird, the agency recruited hundreds of American journalists to spread false stories and propaganda about the company's benign activities. Eventually, this depraved fabric of anti-journalism enlisted entire news networks, including ABC, NBC, Newsweek, Associated Press, the Saturday Evening Post. Now the guys and gals at Langley could relax. Henceforth, America and global eyes were dutifully prismed through the rose-colored lenses of Mockingbird. But back to the Vatican. The IOR, that's their bank there, the solid banking pillar of the Gladio community that it was, could hardly be expected to do all the heavy lifting itself. After all, the global heroin industry would, by 1980, be pulling in a cool $400 billion annually. En route, an extensive and orchestrated financial network would be required to supplement God's Bank. That's what they call the IOR. They call it God's Bank. As with any fine orchestra, it helps to have a maestro of exquisite genius to run the show. A nice round of applause then for one Michelle Sindona. The biography of Sindona, and that's Sindona, begins, humbly enough, with his degree in tax law from the University of Messina in 1942, after which, in quick succession, he rockets to stardom as a leading financial advisor to the Sicilian Mafia, an agent for the CIA, and therefore a financial intimate of the Holy See. By the late 1950s, Sindona had become the linchpin in a nexus between the mob, the CIA, and the Vatican that would eventually, as Williams chillingly puts it, result in the toppling of governments, wholesale slaughter, and financial devastation. Though a full elaboration of this bewilderingly complex financial system is best left to the author, it is worth briefly savoring a few highlights. To begin with, Sindona purchased Fasco, as FASAG, a Liechtenstein holding company, and through which he purchased his first bank, the Banca Privata Finanza, BPF. The BPF then became by way of a Chicago-based intermediary bank, Continental Illinois, a principal conduit for transferring drug money from the OIR, that's God's Bank, for the purposes of Gladio. In fact, this banking pipeline in particular, which provided the filthy lucre that filled the 1967 coup d'etat in Greece, but more on this heavy stuff in a bit. It was through his Chicago contacts that Sindona first met Monsieur Paul Marcinus, popular known as the Gorilla. That's Gorilla, G-O-R-I-L-L-A. The Gorilla was 6'4", a gifted street fighter, and a lover of bourbon, fine cigars, and young women. Under Sindona's patronage, Marcinus would soon rise to become both Pope Paul VI's personal bodyguard and the head of the IOR, the Gorilla. A third musketeer in the person of Roberto Calvi, the assistant and later full director of the famous Milan-based Banco Ambrosian, came to complete the three Vatican amigos. Together, they would cut a dramatic collective figure in the global banking underworld all through the Anni di Piombo, the Gladio years of lead in Italy from 1969 to 1987. So the years that the Gladio, it's called the Anni, A-N-N-I, di Piombo, P-I-O-M-B-O. And that means the Gladio years of lead. I was a little confused. Years of lead, LED, meaning lead bullets. I thought they discovered lead for a minute. So no, the Gladio years of lead in Italy went from 1969 to 1967. Exactly how dramatic is illustrated par excellence by Calvi's essential dark demise. Who among us old enough to remember can forget the macabre spectacle, June 1862, of Calvi's body hanging from Blackfriars Bridge, his feet dangling in the thymes and pockets stuffed with five masonry bricks? Sindona would also later be murdered in 1989 by means of a cyanide-laced cup of coffee whilst in jail under maximum protective custody. Calvi was a key figure in establishing a series of eight shell companies, six in Panama, two in Europe, through which drug lords like Pablo Escobar in South America were encouraged to deposit their ill-gotten loot. The CIA put shoulder to wheel by helping ferry the Escobar cocaine in a fleet of planes operating out of Scranton Airport in Pennsylvania. The monies were then transferred via Banco Ambrosia to the IOR, or God's Bank, which took a 10 to 20% processing fee. From there, funds were distributed to a host of European banks set up by Sindona, for use by gladio units spread throughout the continent. In addition to the flow of cash from the cartels, funds were bled from Banco Ambrosio into the eight shell companies, again for use by the CIA in funding its covert operation. This points up a general operating procedure of the entire Gladio banking system. The system, far from being designed to turn a profit, was expressly designed to lose money, that is, to have it siphoned off into covert ops. Such explains the regular and spectacular failure of a host of CIA-related banks, including Franklin National Bank, which was purchased by Sindona, Castle Bank and Trust, Mercantile Bank and Trust, both set up by the ubiquitous Paul Helliwell, Nugan Hand Bank in Australia, and from which funds were diverted to undermine Prime Minister Whitlam during the Vietnam War, and the infamous Bank of Credit and Commerce International, based in Karachi in aid primarily of the Southeast Asian heroin trade. Indeed, it was precisely the collapse of Banco Ambrosio itself that brought both Calvi and Sedona to their untimely ends. I think one of them got hung and one of them got shot or something, right? Well, did they really get hung? Did they really get shot? Well, I kind of doubt it. Maybe, maybe, maybe not. They could kill them to send a message to the rest of the crooks, right? Finally, it is worth noting here that these august institutions were linked in a tight criminal embrace with many of the most prestigious financial firms in America, including Citibank, the Bank of New York, and the Bank of Boston. The base of the iceberg, in short, extended far and wide. But then, what was all this money really doing? Following the thwarting of Italian democracy in 1948, the Gladio secret armies entered into a period of what one might characterize as pregnant incubation. Thus, it was during the 1950s that the various drug supply routes and financial networks were being created, as were some of the principal political organizations. Probably the most important of the latter was Propaganda Due, otherwise known as P2. Created in 1877 as a free masonry lodge for the Piedmont nobility, it was banned by Mussolini in 1924, only to be resurrected post-war with the approval of Alan Dulles. God, they're back again, those Dulleses. I'll have to look. One Dulles was in charge of the CIA, and the other Dulles robbed the entire Latin American world. Just look up the Banana Wars, okay? The lodge, and what lodge are we talking about? We're talking about, created in 1877 as a Freemason lodge for the Piedmont nobility. So it was a lodge, okay? And it was banned by Mussolini in 1924, resurrected post-war with the approval of Alan Dulles, himself a 33-degree Mason. The lodge, though at first dominated mainly by spooks, spies, military, and mafia figures, would soon encompass a who's who of Italian political, corporate, banking, and media supremos to boot. Indeed, the organization would eventually spread shoots throughout Europe as well as North and South America, and its members would have come to include such luminaries as Henry Kissinger and General Alexander Haig. I've been trying to tell you, they're all in this together, right? The P2's denicism, denicism of especially significance was Lucio Gelli, L-I-C-I-O. The latter's pedigree was impressive. A former volunteer in the 735th Black Shirts Battalion, a former member of the elite SS division under Field Marshal Goring, and thereafter a chummy employee of the U.S. Counterintelligence Corps of the Fifth Army. working with William Colby, the OSS agent in France, and Alan Dulles, the OSS director, Gelly soon gained entry to the Vatican, where he helped set up the Nazi escape routes to Argentina. His ties with Argentina would later prove critical in facilitating Operation Condor. And Operation Condor was the U.S.-backed mass assassination program in the 70s and 80s in South America. Moreover, in 1972, Gelly would emerge as P2's supreme worshipful master, under whose leadership the Lodge would reach its full horrific flowering. Finally, it is worth mentioning at this juncture that it was as a result of a police raid on Gelly's villa in 1981 that the full tentacle structure of Gladio would come to light, but we digress. One of the first substantive actions of Gladio was the Turkish coup of 1960. Here, the incumbent Prime Minister, Anan Mendenes, made the fatal mistake of believing he was really in charge, and thereafter initiated a visit to Moscow to ensure economic aid. The stay-behind army, see, they call them stay-behind armies, okay? What they basically did after World War II, it was a trick, okay? Gladio and these people became the stay-behind armies that nobody seemed to be aware of, right? So the stay-behind army in Turkey, known as counter-guerrilla, in alliance with the Turkish military, quickly disabused him of any such delusions by arresting and executing him. Throughout the 1970s, both counter-guerrilla and its youth wing, the Gray Wolves, here we got some wolves again, okay, through 1970s, both counter-guerrilla and its youth wing called the Gray Wolves would stage ongoing terror attacks that resulted in the death of over 5,000 students, teachers, trade unions, booksellers, and politicians. Counter-guerrilla would also figure in the Turkish coup of 1980 when its commander, General Kenan Evnen, toppled the moderate government of, it's called Bulet. According to Williams, U.S. President Jimmy Carter phoned in his approval to the CIA station chief in Ankara, a guy named Paul Henze, with a jubilant, "You boys have done it!" What they had done, of course, was set up a tyranny in which thousands more would be tortured while incarcerated. The Turkish Gladio boys would also be unleashed in the 1980s upon the PKK, the Kurdish Workers' Party. All of this was in keeping with Brzezinski's, Carter's national security advisor, core vision of the importance of controlling Central Asia, to which Turkey was both a vital portal and a key NATO ally. And when I get back to talking about the Caesareans, Turkey, pretty big deal. Pretty big deal over there in Turkey. But it was important to know this first. Alas, Gladio would prove something of a disappointment in France, where having backed a series of assassination attempts against the regrettably too independent President Charles de Gaulle, it found itself on the receiving end of de Gaulle's boot. Actually, it was NATO itself, at the time headquartered in Paris, that was unceremoniously kicked out of France. In 1966, NATO was kicked out when it took up its present cozy and famously corrupt abode in Brussels. Hello, Brussels. But of course, de Gaulle was ahead of the curve and understood all too well who was mainly behind the mayhem and murder. Greece, unfortunately, did not fare as well. In 1967, the Hellenic Raiding Force, a franchise of Gladio, and playing to a NATO-authorized script entitled Operation Prometheus, overthrew the left-leaning government of George Papandreou. The ensuing military dictatorship would last until 1974. So, yes, I think we kind of get the picture here, right? They're all working together, right? And that was how it started. So they murdered a few prime ministers. At least two popes felt the sharp end of the Gladio sword as well. In August 1978, Pope Paul VI died. His successor, the preternaturally timid John Paul I, soon gave his handlers a very real shock when, after looking at the IOR accounts, or the Bank of God, he issued a call for reform. The very next day, the otherwise fastidiously health-conscious pontiff, in office barely a month, was dead. Not just dead, but expired with the telltale bulging eyes and horrific grimace of acute poisoning. His autopsy was definitively thwarted by an illegal and hastily contrived embalming, and his personal papers disappeared without a trace. Archbishop Marcinus, having been temporarily removed prior, was returned to office, whilst Calvini and Sedona, also under scrutiny at the time, breathed a temporary sigh of relief. Having almost been burned once, the overseers of Gladio made sure to engineer the follow-up papal succession. Thus did Cardinal Carlo Wojtyla shuffle onto the historical as Pope John Paul II. Now, at first, John Paul worked seamlessly with the CIA and Gladio. Together, they oversaw the destruction of liberation theology in Latin America, the continued undermining of Italian democracy, and the dispensing of black funds for solidarity in Poland. Oh, but how the best laid plans do oft go astray. By the spring of 1981, not only were events spinning out of control for Gladio itself, but so too they were for Banco Ambrosia, and by extension, the IOR, the Pope, The Pope inexplicably refused to act. Compounding this lapse was an unaccountable trifecta of moral turpitude that witnessed the Holy Father suddenly breaking into treasonous song, singing the benefits of rapprochement with the Soviets, recognition of the Palestine liberation army, and EGAD's nuclear. Nuclear disarmament. The order from on high was given, kill the Pope. But best to blame it on the Soviets. So they issued the Bulgarian thesis, wherein a lowly Bulgarian airline employee, Sergei Antop, was set up as the patsy. In truth, the key actors in the papal plot came straight from Gladio Central Casting. The starring role in the drama fell to General Giuseppe Santovito, the head of Italy's military intelligence and the commander of the Italian Gladio units. His co-star, Theodore Shackley, was the infamous CIA mastermind who had already served as executive producer on such epics as Operation Phoenix, involving the murder of some 40,000 non-combatants in Vietnam, Operation Condor, the setting up of Nguyen Han Bank, and along with Dele Shadi, the murder of Salvador Allende. West Germany's BND, the National Security Services, garnered a significant credit by harboring and financing the two actual assassins, both from Turkish Gladio. And of course, the mighty Wurlitzer, Operation Mockingbird, figured prominently in the aftermath, grinding out endless tunes on the Bulgarian thesis, despite the fact that Akis eventually was the lone conviction in the shooting. The production ended all somewhat anticlimactically when the Pope, on March 13, 1981, was only seriously wounded. In a fascinating denouncement, however, on Christmas Day 1983, the Pope opted to publicly forgive AGCA, Italian state television was allowed to record the moment when John Paul asked his assassin for whom he received his orders. Leaning forward to hear Agaka's response, the Pope appeared momentarily frozen, then clasped his hands to his face. Though the Pope kept it secret, there was little need to guess at the answer. The adventures of both Agaka and the calf are the stuff of legend. Indeed, calf figures in events well beyond the timeline of Gladio proper. Enough to suggest that Gladio never really shut down at all. But that, as they say, is a whole other story and one I will leave to the author to take up. So, this also falls back to, I'll give you an example here. I've got to see here. Okay. Because if you remember, they made such a big deal out of Kennedy being the first American Catholic president, right? Well, they're all Jesuits, right? Just a few days before Christmas, 1988, terrorists blew up Pan American Flight 103 as it passed over Lockerbie, not long after leaving Heathrow. One of the 259 murdered aboard was Matthew Gannon, the eighth child of devout Catholic parents. Gannon had just joined the Central Intelligence Agency in 1977, becoming a skilled operations officer and linguist. Nearly a year later, in October 1989, many victims' belongings still lay unclaimed in trailers in Lockerbie. When Gannon's brother arrived there, he identified his family members' personal items by spotting a missal in a bag with one of Matthew's favorite shirts. Excuse me. Conspiracy theorists have probably already exploited Gannon's death. It's difficult to investigate anything about the CIA or the Vatican and not encounter narratives that resemble thriller novels. But we shouldn't ignore the topic. The CIA is the best known of the 17 agencies that comprise the American intelligence community. It has earned nicknames like, and listen up, nicknames for the CIA, Catholic Intelligence Agency, and Catholics in Action. It's worth exploring why. No official statistics exist on Catholics in the CIA or any other American intelligence agency. But one interesting clue is a relatively high number of Catholics who have served as director of the agency. The United States is a country in which, with the recent exception of the Supreme Court, Catholics have never dominated the highest offices. And remember, recently, I don't know, the last couple of months, there was a big effort to get rid of the Protestants in this country and flood this country with Catholics. There was also a big effort to send over 4,000 pedophile Irish priests to flood the churches in this country. This is how all of these children are getting these ideas to get these deadly surgeries and stuff. It comes from the churches. The churches and the hospital, all of them are working together. So let's look at these. This is an interesting way to look at it because they're always saying, well, you know, JFK, the first Catholic, and Joe Biden is the second one. Well, not really. They're all Jesuits. The United States is a country in which, with the recent exception of the Supreme Court, Catholics have never dominated the highest. Well, that's a true statement. Jesuits dominate, right? Only one out of 44 U.S. presidents has been Catholic. The first and only Catholic vice president is the current one, Joe Biden. Before John Kerry, the last Catholic Secretary of State was Alexander Haig, who left the post in 1982. By contrast, three of the last five CIA directors have been Catholic: Michael Hayden, Leon Panetta, and the current director, John Brennan. Oh, I looked up the recent guy. I got him down here. The new guy is one, too. Looking back, a number of Catholics led the agency in critical periods during the Cold War. There were no Catholic directors in the 1990s. Some of the most influential directors in CIA history have been Catholic. Men such as Walter Brennan Smith, John McCoe, William Colby, and William Casey. They were not just casual Catholics. They were devout mass goers, in many cases members of groups like the Knights of Malta. The conspiracy theorists usually start there with nefarious plots about the Vatican steering world affairs. Of course, they never ask why the all-powerful Vatican can't engineer more Catholic presidents. To make sense of Catholics in the CIA, you have to go back to the 1940s before the agency ever existed. Until that decade, the U.S. did not have a unified intelligence system. Separate branches of the military collected and analyzed their own intelligence. That changed with the Office of Strategic Services, OSS. This was the CIA's predecessor, responsible for espionage and sabotage operations during World War II. The OSS was founded and led by General William J. Donovan, who history knows as Wild Bill. Donovan was born into a poor Irish Catholic family in upstate New York. He experimented with other denominations while a student at Columbia. Of course, he went to Columbia University, right? Okay. He experimented with other denominations while a student at Columbia University, though he remained devoted to Catholicism, even after marrying into a rich Protestant family. After heroic combat in World War I, he made a fortune as a Wall Street lawyer. Wild Bill did not exclusively recruit Catholics. He sought anyone with ability. The OSS attracted many kinds of people, including WASPs, who sought a more adventurous role in the war. But many Catholics ended up in the OSS. It's impossible to know for certain why this happened. Was it simply that Wild Bill recruited from his own social circle, which probably included more Catholics than if he had been a Presbyterian? One telling fact is the OSS used its foreign nationalized branch based in New York to recruit from American ethnic groups. At this time in American history, Catholics were well represented among immigrants: Italians, Irish, Poles, Bavarians, Germans, and many Slavs. Another historical fact is even more significant. Catholic anti-communism in the 1940s and 50s was at its zenith. Major Catholic organizations such as the Knights of Columbus supported Senator Joseph McCarthy, himself a Catholic, in his quest to purge U.S. of communist influence. Were young Catholics inspired to take a more active role in fighting the godless Soviets? Near the middle of the 20th century, establishment Protestants still treated Catholics with suspicion. Donovan would have been Attorney General in Herbert Hoover's administration had anti-Catholic sentiment not kept him from it. Catholics were more likely to be trusted and accepted within Donovan's OSS than in other government agencies. Today, many admire the OSS for its daring do, but many government figures had only contempt for the agency when it existed. Not only did it spurn its operatives as amateurs, but also resented them from encroaching on others' territories. Critics of the OSS included J. Edgar Hoover, the head of the Federal Bureau of Investigation and an enemy of Donovan's. In many ways, then, the OSS was a haven for outcasts, making it even more suitable for unfashionable Catholics. From its earliest stages, the OSS was involved with the Catholic Church. Donovan already had extensive contacts within the Catholic Church. So, yeah, the OSS shut down in 1945, but U.S. intelligence and the Catholic Church remained strongly connected. So, I would have to say that if you have a church in your country, you got a bunch of CIA agents, right? Because a church is, and there is a lot more to this story. I mean, a lot more to this story. So I looked up the current person. The current director of the CIA, George Tenet, is a Roman Catholic and a member of the Knights of Malta. So is William F. Buckley, a famous former CIA agent and proponent of supposedly conservative causes. Vatican's intrusive political meddling in America's affairs. So the documents, for example, how the CIA was founded by an Irish Roman Catholic. Yes, he was chief of the Knights of Malta. The Knights of Malta were that military order. The Knights of Malta, all of them wear that Iron Cross. The Iron Cross was worn by the Nazis. It was worn by the Maltas. Go look at, I have a whole page. Let me see here. I'm going to have to close off this show. I've about exhausted what I can say. The secret American Society members are primarily the Knights of Malta and Opus Dei. The current director, Roger Tenet, blah, 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 blah. Okay. And this was interesting, too. In fact, almost all the heads and major ranking officers of the CIA have either been Knights of Malta or Freemasons. And this is interesting. The head of the FBI who ordered the siege of Waco is Roman Catholic and a member of the Knights of Malta. That is Louis Free. So, yeah, they all connect. This was, I don't know why I had it down here, but I talked in the very beginning about this Watergate Hotel. G. Gordon Liddy, who led the raid into the Watergate Hotel in 1962, breaking into the Democratic Party's headquarters for Richard Nixon. He was a CIA agent, Roman Catholic, and also a member of the Knights of Malta. By the way, the Vatican owns the Watergate Hotel. Yeah, I looked that up because you'll read that the Vatican owned the Watergate Hotel. And the Watergate complex was initially owned by Watergate Improvements, Inc., a division of SGI. In 1969, the Vatican sold its interest in SGI. Although the Watergate was considered one of the most glamorous residences in the city, as early as 1970, residents and businesses complained of substandard construction. Yeah, that's the way they work, right? The CIA serves as an agency through which secret assistance to the Holy Mother Roman Catholic Church can be provided by secret American Society members acting as her defenders. During the CIA's formative years, Protestants predominated. However, Roman Catholics wrestled control of the CIA's Covert Action Section. It is no coincidence that some of the agency's more grandiose operations were in Roman Catholic countries of Latin America and the Roman Catholic regime of South Vietnam. For creating the Office of Strategic Services, or OSS, the wartime predecessor to the CIA, and this special arrangement with the Vatican, General William Wild Bill Donovan was decorated in July 1945 by Pope Pius XII with the Grand Cross of the Order of St. Sylvester, the oldest and most prestigious of papal knighthoods. Well, that sounds a lot, right? They give you those awards. Even today, the CIA is referred to as the Catholic Intelligence Agency, while the Vatican's ties to espionage date back more than 5 centuries. So, I think that's about all I have to say here. I'm going to go ahead and put this on hold and kind of scroll down here for a second. They also have this thing called the Sacred Secret Service. Pope Pius reportedly founded, this was a Pope Pius before the other one, the 16th century Vatican Espionage Service to support Queen Mary of Scots. Although the Vatican State has never admitted the existence of the Holy Alliance or counterintelligence unit, the others describe their operation as an open secret. Nazi hunter Simon Wiesenthal once told an interviewer, "The best and most effective espionage service I know in the world belongs to the Vatican." So I think that what happens in all these countries, well, people trust the church, right? And the church, during all these wars and stuff, they can act like they're pretty neutral, right? What do they end up doing? Well, I think that they end up stealing a lot, right? And what they do is that they, let me see here. Wait a second. Oh, yeah, there's this one weird thing. It's called the Dark Night of the Soul. Every year in late June, a bizarre ritual takes place in June. Men and women fly in from all over the world to participate in a ceremony that has been performed for centuries. Next year, the assembled might find CIA Director William Casey in their midst. If they make the journey, the world Catholics elite join on St. John's Day, dressed in scarlet uniforms and black capes, brandishing swords and waving flags emblazoned with the 8-pointed Maltese cross. These Catholic brothers and sisters will, in an atmosphere of pomp and circumstance, so they show their defense to the Holy Mother Church. So that's a Night of Malta thing they do every year. I don't know what else to say. It appears to me that the same group of people took over. They gave themselves all these titles. They came up with all these rules. And they have put themselves in power ever since then. And us being normal people, I guess because of all their fancy clothes and all their stuff, we thought, well, they must know a lot of stuff, right? But what do these doctors know, right? And doctors wear the same symbol as the church. Doctors wear that snake. The church of the Vatican means serpent. How much more obvious can some of this get? So I'm going to be going ahead and closing this out now because I want to get back to the other group of people because it helps to explain people getting raided around. There's this whole thing about how they get people to move around. They usually get them to move around so they can steal their land. Look no further than what's going on right now in Palestine. Look what's going on right now in Hawaii. They start fires. They do wars. They do all kinds of things. And the goal is usually to get people to move off of their land so it can be stolen. And that is how these things usually all end out. And the Cessasian people, it becomes very interesting how they left Russia and ended up in Turkey. So, a lot to say about that. So, I think that this shows that how they have spread themselves all over. Because what do you find in all these war zones? Well, you find chefs cooking food. You find church people there praying over people, right? And you find soldiers. Why, if you don't think that they're involved, then you have to answer this question. Why is the church always seem to be hanging around all these places, right? Why are they around all this war and all this terror, acting like they're just there to grieve with people, right? when they're really there as the instigators, and they're kind of like the cleanup crew, right? They can go in and say, well, we must forgive the people that did this to you because it's a Christian way. So they can go in there and twist things around all kinds of ways, tell people, well, Jesus suffered. What are you complaining about? Jesus was nailed to a cross. He just got slashed in the face by a few swords and stuff. So see, they can always use it as a weapon, right? Well, we really know suffering. What do you know? So yeah, the church. Talk about hiding in plain sight. So anyway, be safe out there and goodbye for now.